Hello, guys. So we're starting off here. We're just going to wait for you, some of you guys, to join us. We've got a few of you registered to see this webinar that I'm doing with Mike from the website bassguitarrocks.com. So we're going to just let things kind of tick along for a couple of minutes here. I've got some chick career for you guys to listen to here. Bit of a topical reason why. Had an email from my dad today saying he'd booked tickets to see the Chick Corea Electric Band because they're back touring. Yeah, which I'm super excited about. I saw those guys, the original band, probably 25 years ago. So I'm 36 years old now, so you can take a guess how old I was then. And yeah, one of my formative musical moments, and having done 20 years of plus of playing bass, I'm really cool. I'm really excited to see you, Patitucci. So yeah, hey, Bill has arrived. Bill, lovely to see you. Where in the world are you, mate? Please do tell us. Cool. Please do type any questions you got. We've got the chat box there so we can see everything you're doing, which is really cool. So got eight. Yeah, let's see who else is online. So Bob's there. Hello, Bob. Hello, Paul. Hello, Gene. Eight live out. Brilliant. This is great, guys. I'm really excited to have you on here as the first members webinar. So yeah, as I was saying, the reason you've got some crazy jazz going on here is my dad has booked tickets to see Chick in, I don't know, it's about June time. It's going to be a massive bit of nostalgia to see these guys again. This is, if you can see my screen here, guys, say hello. Let me know if you can see my screen. Can you see this wonderful picture of me with a grin? Do let me know. Yeah, cool. So yeah, here we go. We've got, actually could turn the Spotify up here. This is the Beneath the Mask album, which was like one of those just totally inspirational albums when I was a teenager, amongst obviously other stuff like Extreme and Guns N' Roses. I was a bit of a crazy kid at that time. It's cool. So I really want to welcome you guys and say thank you for joining us here. We're going to get on with it in just a couple of moments. So we have Paul there, we've got Bill, we've got Bob. Anybody else not said hello, please do just say hello on the chat. It's really good to see you there. Jeff from Alabama, brilliant, loving it. Mike, can you see these guys saying hello?
Yeah,
cool. Brilliant. Anybody else? So, anybody else? Anybody else? Let's just see. Anybody else? 8 to 10. Yeah, so brilliant. We've got a lot of you online here. This is really cool. Rusty, I can see you're there. Lovely to see you, mate. Gene. Yeah, Paul, Bob. Brilliant. Cool. Let's get on with this and let's not kind of take too much longer getting on with this, and let's talk gear. Cool. Let's turn the crazy jazz off for a little while. So, and there we are, stop. So I want to introduce you. I'm going to give us a quick go back to the other screen, turn the screen share off, or go silent for a couple of seconds. So we have Mike
Ippersell. Yeah.
Now I'm going to screw that one up. My webcam needs to go back on. Yes. Hello, guys. Can you see me all? Okay. Just say yes. Say big yes in the screen if you can see us. Cool. Cool. So I am here with Mike Ipasel. Mike is the head honcho. He's the man behind a website that I don't know if you've seen or not called Bass Guitar Rocks. Bass Guitar Rocks is more of a gear orientated website. Am I right to say that, Mike?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, we don't do a lot of instruction there. We just kind of talk about gear and different sort of bass related stuff, like, you know, how to pick a bass and all that type of stuff. So yeah, not so much like what you do, more of the lesson based stuff, just more kind of bass general stuff and some talk about different, you know, bass celebrities, but bass musicians and stuff like that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. You started this website. It's been around quite a while now, hasn't it?
We're coming up on 10 years, which kind of blows my mind. But yeah, it'll be 10 years in July from when we first started. So yeah,
that makes eBass look like baby. We're going to be celebrating a year in, I think, March or April, sometime around that. It's been a crazy year, and so I'm really grateful to you guys for joining the Bass Lab and being part of this ever-growing community. It's totally blown me away what it's done, and it's given me the opportunity to have really cool conversations and hook up with guys like Mike, who are a bit more, how can I say it, gear-orientated than I am. I don't mean that in the slightest derogatory way. I'm a playing kind of character, and the guys don't follow the gear thing quite as closely, although granted, I do love it, but they're always guys which know a lot more on a technical level than me. And so this is why it's really cool to talk to Mike and get on with it. We're going to talk for probably about 40 minutes or so. Then we'll have a bit of a Q&A at the end. You're welcome to ask us questions as we go through. This is going to be me giving Mike a bit of an interview. But please, if you're going to go in depth on questions, do ask towards the end, because that is your time. I want us to try and be a super interactive one, because it's great to have you guys in the mix. This is here for kind of your benefit and for you to ask those questions which have always been bugging you about gear and how to set yourself up gear, because I've personally seen guys which have been playing a long time and do make some rookie errors there. Fan has just gone off here, my Aguilar amp, so if that's annoying anybody or whatever on that, do let me know and I'll turn it off. I thought I'd better have it on just in case, because we're talking gear. So cool. Mike, one of the things you're best known for is an article called Bass Amp EQ for Beginners, isn't it? And this has been downloaded hundreds of thousands of times, I believe. quite a lot anyway. And we're gonna talk through. First of all, how did that article come about?
Well, it just started out as sort of, I wanted to put together all sort of the wisdom, all the things that I had learned, just from being playing gigs and practicing in different sort of scenarios and using different bits of gear and different things like that. And just, I was a long time subscriber with Bass Player Magazine, and, you know, so you'd read a random article, or, you know, you'd read you'd have your bass hero say one little tidbit here. I just thought, you know, there's not really any place where it's all together, like in one consolidated, you know, resource where people can, you know, especially somebody who's just starting out. Or, I mean, you could have been playing for decades, but say you didn't ever play out in a band. You've just been playing in your room or your basement or your garage. You may not learn these lessons that, you know, I've picked up along the way. And it's, you know, it's not entirely me. It's things I've read and from other bass players as well. So I just thought, hey, let's put it all in one place. And it was really just trying to give something back. I wasn't really expecting too much out of it, but it started to get shared. And the next thing I know, I was getting a lot of, I mean, it's definitely the most popular article on my site and most comments and everything like that. And I did get there was a little bit of controversial stuff in there. There was a couple of people that were, a couple of trolls that kind of came along and were kind of saying, hey, you're not an audio engineer. And I'm like, no, I do not claim to be an audio engineer. I'm just saying, look, this is what I do. This is what I found has worked for me. And feel free to test it out yourself. And if it doesn't work for you, don't use it. But I've had a lot of responses from bass players that thank me for putting it together. So that's
totally with you there. One of the things that I've found, and we're going to talk about this article in just a sec before I fly straight up piste, is that what sounds great in a music store can often sound crap on a gig. And particularly when I was younger, I'd have so many experiences like that. Because, yeah, all right, I was a bit of a gear nerd in a former life. but, like, and had went through, I don't know, Edens, Harkeys, you name it, Acoustic Image, all that sort of stuff. And I think I've probably, Gannon Kruger, I think I've probably done most of the big brands, actually, over the years. And what would happen is you play something which sounded great in the store, and you get it home, or you get it on a gig, crucially, and it would sound crap. But what would come into play was multiple other factors. Because a good music store will, by and large, try and get their music store to sound good. They put a carpet on the floor or whatever it might be to do it. And you're playing basses which have new strings, or they want to sell kits. So it's put in the best possible, how can I put it, best. They're going to put all their gear in the best light. And one of the big things that they will do in the bass world, which sounds good to our ears, is put this big smiley face EQ in. Okay, we'll talk about EQ in a second. But that scoops out all the mid-range to the sound. It sounds great. Slap just is like, sounds like the studio records. It's great. But that sound is useless when you kind of get on a gig. And because you can't hear it, and that's what I found. So a lot of these ideas come from my quest to actually hear myself on a gig. It's that basic. And even sometimes in a really, really bad room these days, I sometimes don't quite get the sound right, but 9 times out of 10 I can now. And it's these sort of tips which do that. So cool. Is everybody doing okay? Just check in on the chat box if you can. Please do. Anyway, let's go on. Mike, tell us first of all, what is Bassamp EQ? I mean, we're going to start off grassroots level and work our way up here.
Yeah, so I mean, nowadays, I mean, there's so many, almost everything you buy has got EQ on it. You've got a lot of, you know, onboard EQ on your amp and, well, on your bass, and then you've got it, you know, the strip on your amp, and then, you know, you may have some sort of EQ boost or something pedal. So when I'm talking about it for the sake of the article, I'm basically referring specifically to your amplifier, but also in relation to these other pieces of gear. So ideally, especially if you have an issue where you're trying to get a good sound, you want to go to ground zero. You don't want to have all kinds of crazy effects or filters or whatever that's in your bass active and be tweaking stuff on your amp and be tweaking stuff on a pedal. Ideally, what I'd recommend is, you know, even like if you take the effects out, just take a, you know, have your patch cord, plug your bass into your amp, and just be, you know, put your settings flat on your bass and get your amp as flat as possible. And that's gonna mean something that actually I was revisiting the article. And if I was gonna make an update to the article today, one of the things I would say is read the manual, or read if you have a manual for your bass. Read the manual for your bass. And if you have a manual for your amp, read the manual for your amp, because each manufacturer does things a little bit differently. Some of them are at 12 o'clock. Everything is neutralized. Some of them, they have to be rolled all the way down to, like, you know, 9 o'clock or something at like the zero position. So you need to know how your amp works, because if you don't know, then you're basically, you know, ignorance isn't bliss in this case. You're going to be turning knobs. You're not going to know what you're doing to your sound. So, so that's the EQ section on your amp is going to be the section that, you know, it's either sliders or knobs. And it's, you know, it's the most basic way of saying it is, you know, high, low, and, you know, bass, or it may be, you know, if it's the actual faders, like I've got I play a Trace Elliott amp and it's got like the 12 graphic equalizer on it, you know, and it's, so it's got all the different, you know, Hertz levels on it, which I certainly don't have memorized. I know some people will say, hey, I need a 5K Hertz here or whatever. I don't really, I kind of look more at the shape, but yeah. So, I mean, that's the section on your amp that that's going to be sculpting your sound that's coming out of the speaker.
Yeah. Another expression you might hear on more old school amps and your stereo, I mean, your hi-fi at home is tone controls. It's that basic. It's how, yeah, you sculpt the sound. I'd love it if anybody could put in the chat box here if they feel confused by some of the knobs which are either on their bass guitar or their amplifier. I'll tell you what, if we want to get super specific at the end of this webinar or masterclass rather, we'll actually try and answer. If you've got a specific question, we will try and answer it. But yeah, I'd love it just to say a yes or a no to if you are confused by the knobs on your amp. So yeah, let's move on. So that's kind of, we've done an overview of what bass amp EQ is. I mean, how have you got any tips of how you'd go around equalizing your amplifier? Where would you start doing that?
Well, there's basically, so as I was saying earlier, like knowing your gear, at least having the idea of you want to know where ground zero is for starters. And then if you have a couple of, if you have different ideas on like understanding basically how do bass frequencies work. And then when you put that in combination, then you kind of get into the whole room acoustics, right? Because like, as you were saying, James, earlier, you go to the record store or the record. So you go to the instrument store and it sounds awesome because, yeah, they've got it, you know, carpeted and everything like that. And a lot of times I see it too. I mean, it's a space saving thing, but a lot of times you might be trying out an amp and they got it stacked on top of a different cabinet. So it's 4 feet off the ground. It's maybe hitting you right in the chest and it sounds amazing. And then you take it home and you put it down on the floor somewhere and suddenly it sounds like shit. Right. So, you know, you need to know sort of the physical space that you're going to be using your amp in. And whether you have it coupled to the floor, whether you have it on a stand, you know, these are going to impact your sound. So that's why, you know, if you get to the end of my article, one of the things I say is, you know, congratulations. Now that you got a good sound, it's going to change everywhere you go. And you have to go through these steps every time. So, yeah. Right. So yeah. I don't know if I answered your question or not, but
let's bring it back. The starting point of how to EQ your amp, and I would say that this is how you do it. It might be a bit controversial here, but the starting point of EQing your amp, actually, let me take it a step back. I'll tell you how I conceptualize this actually, is that I set the tone up actually on the bass guitar. I use an active bass, and that is where I set my song to song tones. It's done between a combination of my hands. Okay. In fact, the large amount of it is done with my hands. If I need the odd little tweak or I'm doing a little slap run or whatever it is, it's all done on the bass. That's where it happens. So I don't use a huge amount of pedals. That's not my bag. I don't look down on guys which do that. I think there's some really cool sounds which can do that. I use a little bit of octavider and occasional bit of distortion, but it's just kind of not my thing really. But then when it comes to the amp, the amp is what you EQ, you set the room up. The amp, so I look at the bass as what you do on a song per song basis, and then the amp is how you tailor the sound to the room. And so when you come in, you should set everything, I would say, your best starting point is to set everything to zero, whatever zero might be on your amplifier. Does this make sense, Mike?
Yep, totally tracking with you.
And then you start tweaking your amplifier towards what the room is doing, okay? And this is where it gets a bit more confusing, because you get a bunch of variables in this situation now. And this is where you can go from your great sounding amplifier, which sounds amazing in the store, to on the gig sounding like a heap of crap. So that's the place to start, is put everything at zero. And so Mike is bang on, where you go and find out where zero is on your amplifier. They normally say zero, okay? 12 o'clock is the most common thing at the moment. But sometimes they do work from zero around there all the way over to 10, or if you're Spinal Tap, 11. that's the most important thing in my opinion. So we've got bass. Next thing we're going to talk about is bass amp setup. Now, what do you mean by this, Mom? Over to you, mate.
yes. So setup. I totally agree with getting your amp to do to manage the room. So you're going to end up coming into a situation where your amp is placed in relation to the room. So yeah, that's basically your setup. Now, sometimes you've got, you know, it's your garage and you can put your amp right in the center of the garage if you want, and you don't ever put a car in there. Or a lot of times, most of the times we're dealing with, you've got a bedroom, or you've got, you know, if you're in a band and you're opening up for another band and you're getting whatever space they've allotted to you, and you basically just have to make it work. So there's, you know, in the article, I run through some sort of ideal settings, so that, you know, ideally, based on speaker size, it's not an exact science, but if you have larger speakers, and ideally in the perfect scenario, you would be farther away from your amp so that you're getting the full effect of the sound. But if you have an 18 inch speaker and you're standing 2 inches away from it, the sound's going to be kind of coming together like several feet away from where you're standing. So I think the gigs that you often tend to do, James, you're in probably a bigger ensemble kind of setting, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So you're probably just like, here's a corner for the bass player. Like, just, you're probably sitting on your amp half the time.
yeah. And I love that vibration against my ass. It's the honest answer. And I don't mean that in all kind of all seriousness. Yeah. And this is part of the game of how you set your gear up. Thank you, Bob. You said a lol to that. Oh God, I'm turning into a comedian here. Right. The first thing that I do, what I do on a gig, is I actually raise my amp off the floor. So I will say, I've got a picture of it here. When I will screen share my, I'm going to show this to you. There's going to be a slight pause whilst I screen share something, but I have a picture of what my setup looks like on a gig. So you can see this was actually taken in a small jazz club, but it's got a rare outing for my Overwater fretless, because yeah, that was the vibe. You can see this. So let me screen share very quickly, like so. And so can you see that one there, guys? Let's make this a bit bigger. So there we go. If you look at this, there we go.
Have you started sharing? Because my screen's still the same.
I should be screen sharing. Have I?
Maybe it works different. Maybe I just don't see it. I don't know.
Oh, hold on. I haven't pressed the button. Sorry.
There we go. There we go.
Me and Mike did have a dress rehearsal on this one yesterday, but probably do it with another. So there we go. Can you see my screen there?
Yeah, we can see how to get the best sound out of your bass amp.
Good. That's what I want to hear. This is the rig. This is, bear in mind, this is a small jazz club here. And so you can see the space that I had to fit into here. So you've got the floor tom over there. Okay.
Can you zoom in just a little bit? It's a little bit small on my screen. There we go.
There you go. We can zoom in now. Hopefully it won't pixelate. But you can sort of see what I'm looking at here. So this is a floor tom there, so the side of the drummer.
Right.
And here is a grand piano. So you can see the sort of space that I've got to deal with. And so when I sort of go in on a gig like this, the first thing I do is actually get the bass up off the ground like that. Because what that will do is it will stop the sound throwing straight through the middle of my legs. And so I can actually hear it better. The second thing it will do in this particular situation, well, not in this situation actually, because this was actually a kind of industrial style sort of jazz venue, but it's an old warehouse actually, this venue. But in certain things, if you've got a stage, and this is kind of so important, the stages tend to be a boxy kind of wooden thing, not always, but generally. Okay, so if you then put your speaker cabinet on a wooden stage, that will then act as another cabinet. So I mean, to take it to the extreme, 2 10-inch could probably, you would just end up with this vast cabinet that you're doing, and that's when the bottom end of your sound can start to get a little bit out of control. So that's another reason that I then take the amp up off onto a chair, so that I'm not the sound isn't flying through my legs, and I'm not using the whole kind of stage as another huge speaker. So anyway, I'm going to zoom back to Mike now, and let me get off there. And how do I? Yeah, let me just stop screen sharing. Cool. And turn my webcam, turn the cam back on. Ah, you're still there, Mike. Can you hear me, guys? What's going on? You are both muted. Sorry, guys. Why have we gone muted, Mike? Can you hear me?
How's that?
Yeah, I'm back. Can I hear you? Okay. Can you hear me? What happened there?
I don't know. Maybe it was something with the screen share. I don't know.
Okay. All right. So screen shares are dangerous in this. Okay. Guys, can you hear us both? Brilliant. Okay. The first time I did one of these presentations about a year ago, I did it without a co-pilot, and it was one of the most stressful moments of my life. So I'm grateful for Mike being on the end of the the end of the computer. So okay, anyway, yeah, good.
People can hear us.
There you go. Hopefully you got an idea of why I how I set my gear up. How do you personally like to position your amp when you get on a gig, Mike?
Well, actually, one of the things I was saying when my microphone was off was just to poll the audience here, like in terms of who is who watching is actually performing live gigs, because I know a lot of what we're talking about is going to be sort of more, maybe more applicable if it's either a live gig or it's like a rehearsal. If it's just you in a room by yourself, a lot of this stuff, it's not going to be mission critical. But what happens, like with James, you know, James is obviously on the gig. You see, he's got this, he's got a small little space that he's got to fit into. And then, raising it off the stage helps to kill that boominess from usually most of the stages are hollow, like James said, gets your cabinet off the ground. So it's easier to hit your ears because you need to be able to hear yourself when you play. Otherwise, you know, the first row or first two or three rows out in front, they're hearing you and you're not hearing you and you're just trying to muddle through it, right? So no gig. Bob says yes. I don't know if he was saying yes that he could hear us or yes that he does gigs. But so I mean, basically, I guess if anyone watching this, they're not currently playing gigs, then, you know, you can kind of file this, you know, tuck it under your hat for now. It's some good concepts to know. And if you do a practice or rehearsal with multiple musicians and multiple sound sources, then what ends up happening is obviously you're not playing by yourself anymore. So, you know, if you have a distorted guitar or a loud drummer, suddenly you're like, I can't hear myself anymore. So how, you know, why is the smiley face EQ not solving all my problems? You know, because that's what everyone does. You just put the smiley face on and then there you go. You're fixed, right? So
another one. I've just seen John has written in here. This is why it's so great to have you guys interacting. I gig at church three times a week. And actually, one of the things I really would like, it's kind of a little bucket list thing that I'd like to do, is actually go to one of the big American church services one of these times, because we don't really get too much anything like this, because, I mean, they're technically monstrous animals. I've seen pictures on the internet and gear coming out of your ears. I mean, it's it's incredible. But one of the things that particularly the church market does, because it is a market in it, a whole massive market in itself, is that they will use headphones on gigs or in-ear monitors. So that musicians will actually be listening to themselves on earpieces. And so this might be, let's talk about this for a couple of minutes, just as a little bit of background so you understand this. I've used in-ear monitors extensively. John's on IEMs as well. Good man. Personally, I love in-ear monitors. Bass players have a love-hate relationship with them. Some will hate them, some will love them. And they take a while to get used to. I can't pretend that you instantly overnight go from because you hear things differently. But going back to talking about crap rooms, I've played some dreadful rooms on in-ear monitors and still had great gigs, because it's something I've learned how to use. There are reasons why. It's worth knowing why people like in-ear monitors, or particularly sound guys, which like in-ear monitors, because what you can do is you can pump. They are sending the signal back into your headphones, and so what that means is they can turn the stage volume right down. So the amplifier you've got on stage can then be at a much lower volume. And then the floor monitors around you, Bob's just said he uses floor monitors here, can be turned down to or turned off. I mean, I do gigs where we have completely silent stages. I've done whole shows. I did a tour of Saturday Night Fever, I don't know, about 10 years ago in the UK. That's 3 months on the road with that show. And it had electronic drum kit. There was nothing. There were three brass guys. Tell a slight lie there. Three brass guys. That was the only acoustic instruments that you can hear. Everything else was DI'd. It's a personal taste thing whether you like that sound or not. But what the guys can do, what sound guys do, is they can just lower the stage volume, because what happens is when everybody's battling to hear each other, everybody just turns up and up and up. And so you can end up with this counterintuitive thing. To make things sound better when you can't hear yourself, you can actually sometimes need to turn everybody else down. or everybody turns down and works there. And there are stories in the rock and roll world where they actually have, in the, we're going back to the 80s here and stuff like that before in-ears came along, where they would actually have louder PAs on stage than they would actually go into the audience. So, and that's why you have musicians like Phil Collins, for instance, whose hearing is completely screwed in one ear. So that's where all that kind of stuff comes from. And so if I'm working on in-ear monitors, and I've done a lot, if you, any of you guys have checked out my band Metropolis that works in the UK here, it's all in-ears. And something, if you see a picture of the rig that I use on that, I actually then put my amplifier on the floor. Okay, it's different to the picture I've just shown you there. And what that does for me is it fills up the bottom end. I don't know, 3 out of 4 times the engineer will still come across to turn me down, but that's the point where I go, I know why you want me to do this, and so I will do it, because I trust most of the engineers I work with. I trust quite a lot over here. You do get some rubbish ones too, but and that can destroy your sound. But the wild guys that I've been lucky enough to work with do know their craft, and that's a different example of where I want to actually get the stage shaking a little bit. I want to get those low frequencies, those sub kind of 60 hertz, something like that, that bottom end, because they're frequencies which headphones just don't replicate quite so well. And so my preference in that situation is to still use an amplifier. I can work without actually, but what I find myself doing is inducing a lot of bass off whatever will give me bass, like the EQ on the guitar or whatever. And so my preference, yeah, with in-ear monitors is to have an amplifier there too, but I will place the amplifier differently in that situation to get a different effect, basically, or to get a different feel when we play. So I do, if you get the option to work with headphones, I urge you to give it a try. It's a different experience, but once you get used to it, it's good. Cool. Does anybody have any questions about what I just said there, or have I gone massively off at a tangent? Because I didn't mean to talk about in-ear monitors here, but the church thing came up, and I know that's something that might get thrown at you. Cool. I think we're good. Okay. Brilliant. I just want to say hello to anybody else. Tobias, hello. I haven't met you properly yet, but yeah, nice to see you here. Anybody else I don't recognize? Cool. Brilliant. I think, Tobias, you're in Germany, if I remember rightly. So cool. Anyway, let's crack on with this. We've still got a bit of a way to go. Yeah, so we're going to get into a bit of frequency type stuff. So you see, you've got a bit on here, bass frequencies versus room acoustics. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of touched on it a little bit, in the sense that, you know, if you're putting your cabinet, you know, or your amp, depending on if you have a combo amp, that's the other thing. If you're just starting out, you get all these terms thrown at you, right? Like, an amp could be just the amplifier, or it could be, you know, part of the combo amp, or it could be a multiple, you know, the amp plus, you know, two cabinets and the thing's like 6 feet tall or whatever. So apologies to anyone if it's a little confusing in that sense, but essentially, if you have wherever your bass is coming, wherever the sound is coming from, if it's sitting on the ground, then it's going to be bassier, because now it's a coupling with the floor, and it's resonating, it's vibrating everything. And if it's a wood floor, then it's going to, you know, it's going to go through, shake the whole room and everything else. So that's sort of the bass frequencies. A lot of times, as bass players, especially if you play by yourself, you might say, hey, yeah, I like cranking the bass or whatever. And then you get into a band situation and it's just mud and sludge, and you can't figure out what end, where you are. You can't hear distinct notes at all. And that's, to me, you know, I don't know, maybe there's some bass players out there that really like that, but I feel like I'm completely blind. I can't figure out what note I'm playing. I rely a lot on my ears. I think most musicians do, but, yeah. So yeah, it's like getting it, like, you know, like James did, he got his amp off the floor. So that way, not only are the speakers up and you can hear it more easily, it's also not vibrating the floor. And then, as you said earlier, when you got the in-ears in, you're not getting those low frequencies. So then you would deliberately put it on the floor. You're not worried about hearing yourself because you got it in your ears. You just want that vibration so you can kind of feel it as well as hear it. So that's kind of, you know, that between, and also like you can, there's certain places in the room that if you put your amp in a corner or if you push it right up against the wall, it's the same effect as when you put it on the floor. You're now, if it's attached to the wall, you're vibrating that wall. And again, if the wall is like wood or anything that's really like picks up sympathetic vibrations, you're going to be just shaking the whole place apart. So it's cool. It's a cool thing, that it's a cool superpower us bass players have, but you want to know when to use it and when not to use it. And usually you want that clarity. You want clarity first and then low end second, at least I do anyway, because I need to hear what I'm doing. So
yeah, it's an interesting one you say now, talking about room stuff. And I mean, I'm no physicist here, but you get these things called bass traps as well. And they exist in the corners of rooms. And so if you look on whatever the sort of acoustic paneling or whatever it be that studios use, they will have ones, triangular things dedicated to go in the corners. So putting speakers sort of in the corners of rooms is never a great idea. So if you can kind of get away from that, it's always good. I mean, sometimes in all honesty, you don't get a choice. And I've done loads of gigs in my life. As you know, I'm a jobbing player, really. I mean, that's my background. And when you're doing regular jobs, you are, say you're doing a big awards ceremony or something like that, you're just one cog in a bigger wheel doing a gig like that. So as a band, we can't have egos because we want to get rebooked the next year. So we kind of got to get on with it, because the food or the catering is, or the celebrity presenter or whatever it is a million times more important in the client's eyes than us. So it's sometimes you do get situations where you just got to make the best of a bad situation. That will get thrust upon you, and I have had situations in my career where my heart has slowly dying inside as the gig goes on, or particularly if they put a noise limiter on or something like that. And I mean, noise limiters, we could probably do a whole another webinar on, really, but often it's a bass frequency, you switch, set that one up. And so sometimes it's about making the best of a bad situation. If you know how to use your EQ correctly, that can be hugely beneficial. So going back to your article, and actually, guys, Mike will give you a link to his article as well in the chat in some point towards the end of this, because we're going to wrap up soon and take some questions. But yeah, you've said here, then this is a great one, saying, too much low end. I love this. As a bassist, can you really have too many low frequencies? Yes, is the honest answer. is the honest answer to you. So a couple of quick fire questions for you, Mike.
Sure.
What would you do to your sound if you were found yourself it really weak, thin and trebly? What would you do?
Really weak, thin, trebly. Well, if the amp was off the floor, I would put it on the floor. Ooh. If I had a lot of treble and mids boosted, then I'd roll them back. Usually starting with my bass, because it's the same thing as you described earlier, James. Yep. I don't usually do a ton of EQing at the amp unless it's like for the room. But if it's, I'd probably start with my bass first and kind of see like, do I have something enabled? Do I have something up? And just double check that first. And then if I have to, if it is like room related, then yeah, I'll make the adjustment on my amp. But yeah, I'd be either putting the amp on the floor or, you know, rolling off any troubles. Depending on the type of cabinet you have, if you've got you know, horns or tweeters on it. It might be turning that thing off because you may not need it, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah. I've got a question actually for everybody out there, which I'm going to ask you in just a second, but I'd love everybody to answer this. Do you use an active bass or a passive bass? Or if you're not sure, put right not sure in there and we will answer the exact question there. Because if you're not sure, that's something we need to answer right away. And you need to be clear by the end of this masterclass, the difference between an active and passive bass. So yeah, get typing, guys. We want to know. So do you use an active or passive bass, Mike? I can't remember.
I use.
We actually haven't seen a bass yet in this
master. Yeah, let's. It's my opportunity to show it off. But
is it nice? So it's coming out of the case, guys.
Yeah, it's coming out of the case. one sec here.
Bob's on active. John's on active. That's good to hear. John uses a Hartzee 500 410. Good. I'm actually just about to sell my Hartzee 410. It just doesn't get used anymore. What on earth's that?
It's an F bass made here in Canada. Wooden pickups, covers. So this is a, technically it does both. It's active and passive. I mean, it's,
right.
I use it active 90% of the time, but they have passive there if your battery dies or whatever, or if the active electronics are too noisy and you could just go passive or whatever, so you can do both.
Okay, so you have what EQ? How many bands of EQ do you have on there?
So basically the design, I know you mentioned, I think you said there's a lot of knobs on this, right?
So it kind of looks, that was a cheeky comment on Facebook, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of looks maybe a little bit intimidating for some, but basically what I appreciate, I've had basses before, Ibanez basses that had like stacked EQ pots on it, and eventually they break or they stop working. So one of the things I really appreciate with the design of this bass is it's one knob per function. So that way, you know, if the one knob breaks, it's not going to be, oh, suddenly I lost my mid and my bass boost because it was a stacked knob, if that makes sense. So basically, it's just like a jazz bass in the sense that it's like volume, and tone on the top. That's, and then that's, it's, yeah. Sorry?
That's kind of unique for an active bass, isn't it? Two tones.
Yeah, they have the option of, they can also do just like a master volume and a blend, but some purists, I don't know. I played around with it and I like it. So it's volume, tone on top, and then it's bass, mid, and treble on the bottom. So it's very, you don't get lost with what knobs, what or what's up or what's down. So
cool. Oh, that's good. I've got my, the Sadowski here, which I'm pretty certain everybody has seen in one of my videos to this day. Let me talk you just through the Sadowski preamp on here. So a preamp is another expression for the electronics which are inside there. You can, if you don't understand that term, stick it in the chat box. But yeah, this is my Sadowski, which has done probably 95% of all the gigs I've done in the past 5 years now. It wasn't supposed to be that way. It's just ended up that way. And it's a super comfortable bass. But yeah, what I've got here is I have a wonky volume knob there. So we have that. I have, different to Mike's bass, I have a pickup blend here. And for some reason, Sadowski have wired it the other way around. Goes the other way to every other bass in the world, but you kind of get used to it. then it has this passive tone control. Okay, so this is just like a Fender, which a lot of active basses don't have, because this is an active bass. It has a battery in the back of there, so it has this active bass in there, so it has a passive tone control. And the strange thing about Sadowskis, I don't quite know why it works, but they're actually very toppy instruments, just naturally the way they sound. I often roll off a bit of top on there. And then we have a two-band EQ, which is where it's different to Mike's. I don't have the mid control there. And so I've just got bass here and a treble control. In reality, on a gig, this is different. These aren't sent to notching like you'll find a lot of basses. This is a 0 to 10 idea. So all the way down, I've rolled it off, is 0, is virtually adding nothing. And then you can keep adding more and more to it. In reality, going back to what we were talking about in the earlier in the thing, I actually don't really add any bass or any treble here. I work pretty much flat. I let my hands do the work, and I mean, this is all about gear. This, but if you want a bit more punch when you're on a gig, okay, it's all. Can you hear how much more punch you get from down there to down there? So there, I would always say to any player, and I know this is a masterclass about gear, to the bulk of the sound is still in your hands. There's your hands will do the bulk of the work. And so when I'm working from song to song, if I've got something which needs to be a lot more punchy, for instance, I will adjust my hand position before I reach to touch any controls. That's the first place that I will always start before I start tweaking anything there. Cool. We've got to kind of the end of this. We've done 52 minutes now. I mean, I thought we'd go for about half an hour on this subject. So it's amazing how deep we can get in on this. And it's amazing to see all of you are still here. So I'm like super grateful that you've joined us. Mike, do you want to give a link to your article in the chat box so that you can go and download it? Take it away for a bit of kind of romantic bedtime reading. It's always good.
So there's a link in there. Just click it. It'll take you to the article on my site. If you want to, you can opt in to get a PDF version of it, but otherwise it's all there. Goes into a little bit more detail than some of the stuff we talked into. And actually, I was kind of inspired to revisit this with a couple of different additions as well. Like I said at the very top, you know, just know your gear. Know, like, even what James was just talking about, I call it like organic bass playing, when you're actually using the actual instrument the way it's designed. Like, getting, you want the more mellow tones, rounder kind of sound, or you want punchier and you go more to the bridge. You know, just understanding the way your equipment works, you'll be able to get those sounds that you know, they're hard to get otherwise. You can't just step on a pedal to get sounds, you know, you can get them right from the instrument in your hands. So
yeah, cool, guys. Let's throw this over to you guys now. We've got about another, we're going to wrap this up in, I don't know, 5 minutes or so now, because we've been going an hour, and I still don't know quite how we talk this long, but yeah, brilliant. It's good to know we know our subject. Do you guys have any questions? Has anything, however, if you feel it's really stupid, like you don't know the difference between active and passive, it really doesn't matter. Now is the time to ask. We're very happy to answer all of these questions. Anything that you've got, anything that's been bugging you about gear, anything like that. If you want to ask us what we think of certain brands of kit, I'll give you an honest answer, because I'm not really affiliated with any brands, anything like that. My experience of stuff, I'm very happy to do so. So please do ask if you've got questions here.
I guess I'll just ask you the question, because you mentioned it earlier. How can you tell the difference between an active and passive bass?
Cool. An active and the basic difference, it's almost like working out the sex of a baby, this, isn't it? no. Ironic, because I'm going to be a father or something in the next 6 months. So, cool. We're getting some questions in. Okay. It's basically to do with whether it's got a battery in the back. Okay, that's the easy way to tell. That's the obvious way. And then, like, the insides will be different. Again, like a baby. It's a great analogy, this, actually. And then you'll get
your back covered, and if there's a battery in there, then you've chances are you got an active bass.
And that will give you a load more control. An active bass sounds different to a passive bass. It will sound more modern. It will, the old Fender basses, the old school Fenders will always sound like old school Fenders. And that has that kind of slightly woolly warmer sound. And then you can take it to the extremes of the Steinbergs, which came around in the 80s, the cricket bat type basses, which sounds super modern, although modern 80s, really, I don't know. But and so that's the difference. And so, yeah, the critical thing, another way of looking at it, is on an active basis, a lot of the knobs will be center clicking. So you'll move them up and down and they click in the middle. Okay, so you go from -6 to +12 or whatever, something like that. You get what I mean, it clicks in the middle. Passive basses are just 0 to 10 all the way through. They behave. Actually, another one in there, and correct me, you might be able to tell me, but on an active bass, the volume of a bass will go pretty much consistently from 0 to 10, won't it? And so it will work in 10-degree increments. But a passive bass is kind of off or on, isn't it? You'll get very little difference between 1 and 10. I mean, that's actually, in all honesty, kind of how Brian May used to do his sound on the guitar. So it was rolling off the volume to get different amounts of distortion. The knobs, I'll have to, maybe I haven't phrased that quite right, so I hope I haven't confused anything you there. But yeah, the knobs will behave differently on an active to passive bass. We've got some questions here that I'm going to run through. Let me look over to a screen. Bill has just said, I've adjusted my SVT-7, lovely warm old Ampeg, after watching this. Great work, Bill. I'm glad we've had some benefit. Tobias, what would you guys recommend if headphones for rehearsal purposes? For rehearsal purposes, if we're talking overhead headphones, actually, I haven't got mine in here. What I recommend, I love, and this isn't gospel by any stretch of the imagination, I love Sennheiser HD25s. They're quite expensive, probably about $100 to $150, but a great investment. And what I've found with them is they're quite, they've got quite a lot of honk in the mid-range, which for us bass players hearing ourselves is actually quite a nice thing to do if you're going to use them live for anything. I think they sound really good, but headphones can be a personal taste. I would urge you to go on the side of professional headphones. So Sennheiser's, Beyer Dynamics, anything like that. Don't go down the Bose Dr. Beats kind of lines or anything like that. So much the fashion headphones or anything like that, because they're inducing it to kind of sound good for MP3s and that kind of thing rather than the bass guitar. If you can afford them, go for pro range headphones. They're a great investment. I think there's some cheaper HD25 SDs, something like that. I can't remember what they're called, but there are ones there. But yeah, those Sennheisers are great. I well recommend those. So I hope that's my personal experience, but go out there. Go out there, have some experiments. I mean, take your bass to the shop and try it. They're these little preamps, as little Vox do one, where you can plug your bass in and do that. And so you can wander around the home with a pair of headphones and a battery and stuff, which is a cool kind of way of practicing. What else has just been said there? I hope that's answered your question, Tobias. What is mid ABD active bass and active and passive? I think we just answered that one, didn't we, Mike? Cool. Bob, yeah, mine does that clicky stuff, boom, the great. If it has a battery, it will have a preamp. Was that you writing that, Mike? No. Battery, I can't see my text. Bob, dang slamming Bose, but you are right. So, yeah, sorry if you've got Bose, I didn't mean to slam them. But it's better when we're dealing with bass stuff to go pro audio rather than consumer, I think, particularly because if you're putting bass frequencies in there, you're going to take a hell of a lot more of a battering than they are any kind of consumer fashion brand. Great. I think we're about there. Any last questions before we start wrapping this up? Just if you want to rewatch any of this, just so you know, this masterclass is going to go into the Bass Lab members site probably tomorrow or the day after. I'm going to get Paolo, who I'm sure some of you have met, who's worked in my support team to sort that out. So yeah, you can rewatch this at any point as you're all Bass Lab Plus members. Cool. I'm really happy. I'm super thankful you guys have turned up, I'm super grateful that you're here. It's great, and it's been an amazing month, first month of the Bass Lab Plus. I'd love to know what you'd like to talk about, because just so you know that the masterclasses, I'm going to use the masterclasses to have a good chat with nice people like Mike and that kind of stuff. And the members only lessons are going to be around what you guys want to learn. I had some great questions in there about harmonics a couple of days ago. And so I'm going to go and talk about that soon. And there's some software stuff I want to talk about too, which will help you practice. So please do use the coaching group. That's your chance to get in there, particularly Ask James Wednesdays. That is where I will be around to answer your questions. Don't forget, if you're feeling like you don't know where to start at any point, you need some inspiration, hook us up, and I point you towards a lesson in the members area, and that's what it's all for. I don't want you to like look at a shitload of lessons and just not know where to start, because I know that can be a problem. That can be equally as confusing as that's where we're going. So just to tell you, I put some slides together for this, which I haven't used very much, but I'm going to try and do all of these on the last Thursday of the month. So next members masterclass, put this in your diary, Thursday the 23rd Feb, 6 p.m. GMT. This 6 p.m. slot seems to kind of work well across the different time zones, but obviously if you've got any other ideas, I'm all ears. So because yeah, we're kind of working some of this stuff out as we go along, and this is your membership group, and I want to make this super valuable and the stuff that you guys want to learn. So yeah, I think we're good. So I'm going to sign off there. We've gone an hour and 3 minutes now, which is much longer than I anticipated, but I need to go and have some dinner and see the girlfriend before I get told off. I'm sure you guys get that one. And yeah, let's continue the conversation in the Members Coaching Lab. So big thank you to Mike for coming and joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jay. I'm in there too, guys. So if there's any questions once James posts this, and if you want to ask me questions or James, sure, we'll both hop in there and help you out any way we can.
Yeah, cool. Great. Thank you, guys, for your bills. Just said great job, guys. Thank you. I do appreciate you. Bob, great session. Thank you. I'm glad we've imparted some valuable stuff to you. Cool. Let's wrap it up there. Nice one, guys. See you next time.